From Interfaith Alliance, this is State of Belief. State of Belief can be heard across the country weekends on Air America Radio. The program and this podcast are made possible by Interfaith Alliance and its members. For more information on Interfaith Alliance and its work promoting faith and freedom throughout America, visit interfaithalliance.org. And while you're there, please consider supporting State of Belief and this free podcast service by making a tax-deductible donation to Interfaith Alliance Foundation. We need your help to keep State of Belief on the air. Thank you for listening.
Air America Radio and the Interfaith Alliance Foundation present State of Belief, Religion and Radio Done Differently. Here's your host, the Reverend Welton Gaddy.
Welcome, everyone. This is State of Belief on Air America Radio. I'm Welton Gaddy, president of the Interfaith Alliance, broadcasting this week from the Center for American Progress Studios in Washington, D.C. On today's show, the Democrats are having a party and people of faith are most definitely invited. Yes, the Democratic Convention kicks off in a few short days. And as we anxiously await Barack Obama's acceptance speech, we also have to wonder, after an election season in which questions about religion have made repeat appearances, what role will faith actually play in the National Convention? Now, in the interest of full disclosure, I must tell you, I will be attending the Democratic Convention, and I'll be participating in a panel discussion around faith and the election. I've been asked to explain why I've been critical of plans for another faith-based initiative, and if I will talk about whether or not there is a way to make a faith-based initiative constitutional. And coming up, we'll speak with a man who has helped spearhead the Democratic outreach to faith voters. Barack Obama's Director of Religious Affairs, Joshua DeBaugh, will join us shortly. Also, I will share my thoughts on the recent Saddleback Church Forum led by the Reverend Rick Warren. And I have a challenge for all of you out there. So stay tuned to find out what I've got up my sleeve on a very busy day. But first, this year's Democratic Convention will kick off Sunday night with the first ever interfaith gathering. The event will feature speakers and musicians from a variety of faiths, all assembled to showcase the diverse religious traditions that make up the Democratic Party. But the inclusive effort on the part of Democrats has been met with some criticism. Criticism from those who feel like they might not be adequately represented, most notably from secularists who have weighed in addressing the Democratic planners of religious events with stinging critical comments. I'm now joined by Ronald Aronson. Ronald Aronson is a professor at Wayne State University, and he's the author of a new book, Living Without God: New Directions for Atheists, Agnostics, Secularists, and the Undecided. Ronald, welcome to State of Belief.
Thank you.
You recently penned an op-ed entitled, What About Democrats Who Are Not People of Faith? In this commentary, you express some misgivings about the interfaith event that is going to be used to kick off the Democratic National Convention. Tell our listeners, what are your basic concerns?
Well, my main concern is that this is supposed to be, and it has been billed at, as a unity event, a big tent. And it's also been billed as a values event. But what about those who are not people of faith? Are they deserving of equal respect and equal presence in this unity event, in this big tent? Or is it restricted to those who are theistic, who believe in God, and specifically the personal God of the major religions?
Mm-hmm.
There are something like 40% is my calculation. It's a rough calculation of people who are going to vote Democratic in the fall who do not believe in a personal traditional God.
Mm-hmm.
And in striving for inclusiveness, the Democrats have wound up being exclusive.
And Ronald, in that same article that I've already alluded to, you write that the Big Ten event, which being called the Unity event, needs to be about beliefs and values and not solely about religion. Explain the difference as you see it.
The CEO of the convention, Leah Daughtry, says Democrats are people of faith. That's the way she explains and justifies what she's doing. Well, Democrats are people of faith, and there are Democrats who are people of reason. There are Democrats who are humanists, who are people of science, who people who believe in nature. There are, in other words, many, many, many fundamental starting points that people have in this society and who are likely to be attracted to the Democratic candidate in the fall, which are not theistic starting points, which are not conventional religious starting points. And if you're going to really seek a big tent, then you've got to find some way to respect and to welcome all those different points of view. Now, obviously, you can't have 2,000 different people on the stage, but will the event actually respect those who are not part of those other traditions? And all the signals we've gotten so far are no.
Well, the convention itself aside, do you think that the major candidates in this campaign are making that same distinction? I mean, is Obama or is McCain making an adequate distinction between religion and values?
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Obama, from his various speeches, particularly during the period in his run-up to the primary season, made very clear, in both of his books, he made clear he understands the difference between different sources of values. And he's very sophisticated about that. McCain seems unaware of it at all. But during the campaign season now, suddenly Americans are treated as if we are all religious, which is simply not true, and treated as if our values all come from religion. One of the fascinating statistics of recent surveys is that of all Americans, two-thirds of us get our major moral beliefs not from religion at all, but from elsewhere, from daily life, from pragmatic approaches, from science. In other words, on some very deep level, two-thirds of Americans find their bearings not at all from religion, from elsewhere. So to treat all Americans as if religion is at the center of all of our lives in the same way is not only false, it's demeaning and disrespectful. It's exclusionary.
Is there a way for a candidate to talk about his or her faith, if he or she wants to do that, without alienating voters like you who don't consider themselves people of faith?
Yes, if the candidate is not pandering to those of a similar faith, but is really steeped in the understanding that we have many different starting points, and that this happens to be my particular starting point, and I have to translate that starting point into universal language.
How are the candidates doing on that?
Well, Obama, what I've just said is actually Obama's original position.
Uh-huh.
So I got it from him. He's very smart about it, but I think now he's running to aim at the 10% or so of evangelicals he hopes to spin off from the Republicans. So he's acting as if, it seems to me, that's all that matters. And McCain, forget it. I don't think he has that understanding in any case. He is very good on trying to keep his own religious views private, which is his basic impulse, and I honor that and respect that. But in the campaign, he also feels the pressure to make them more and more public so he can reassure part of his constituency.
I believe that you are articulating about as well as I've heard the argument that we continually try to make, that when you get entanglement between religion, politics, and government, invariably politics begins to drive religion, not vice versa, and religion becomes a utilitarian factor in a political campaign.
So you're saying that you think it's politics, actually, that's going on here, and not faith at all.
Well, they are not running for ecclesiastical office. They're running for political office.
Right.
Well, now tell me how you respond to this idea that's being voiced, that Democrats are a people of faith, and they've always been a people of faith, and it's a mistake to not acknowledge that at the convention.
I think some Democrats have always been a people of faith, and I think other Democrats have not known what to do with that. So I certainly welcome the idea of saying there are a wide range of people who are Democrats, and we want to welcome them all. But if you really are serious about doing that, then you have to welcome them all. Hmm. And you have to say, and I think we should keep our eyes open on Sunday on what's going to happen. I think you have to say, we don't just welcome religious people or conventionally religious people. We welcome spiritualists. We welcome rationalists. But we welcome people who have native religions. We welcome people of other beliefs, of no beliefs, because we are truly all-inclusive. And it's that sense of being all-inclusive that has to animate it, not the political sense of getting evangelical Christians to vote for Barack Obama.
If people continue to listen to this show today, we're going to get to a time when I talk about next week. And the major point I'm making is we've got to watch what happens there and challenge what happens there if it doesn't look American.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
Ronald Aronson is a professor at Wayne State University. His new book is called Living Without God, New Directions for Atheist, Agnostic, Secularist, and the Undecided. Professor Aronson, it's been a pleasure talking with you. Thanks for being on State of Belief.
Thanks very much.
Coming up on State of Belief, what about Democrats who are not people of faith? Doesn't Ronald Aronson make a very good point? We'll pose that very question to a man who has really led the call to faith voters, Joshua DuBois, Director of Religious Outreach from the Obama campaign, is going to be with us in just a moment when we come back. Stay tuned to find out more. Again, I'm Welton Gaddy. You're listening to State of Belief on Air America Radio. On today's show, a look at faith and the Democratic Convention. This year's National Party Gathering will begin with an event featuring a variety of interfaith leaders and also will include something called the People of Faith Caucus, which will meet throughout the convention to talk about the concerns of faith voters. I'm going to be in attendance at the convention, and I won't be alone. Many religious leaders, perhaps an unprecedented number of religious leaders, will be present at this year's festivities. My next guest has played a large role in organizing many of the faith-based events that will take place in Denver. Joshua DuBois is the Director of Religious Affairs for the Obama campaign, and in addition to his work on the convention, Joshua DuBois has also spearheaded a variety of efforts to reach faith voters throughout the election cycle. Joshua, welcome to State of Belief.
Reverend, it's a pleasure to be on.
On today's show, we've already talked a good bit about the interfaith gathering that will open the Democratic Convention this year. But to go larger than that, how do you describe the role that faith will play at the Democratic Convention this year?
Well, Reverend, I believe it's a robust role, but a responsible role, a role that recognizes that, you know, people's faith and systems of belief are an important part of the lives of millions of Americans, but also that there are lines that shouldn't be crossed in engaging and discussing those topics. And so I think what we're trying to do with this convention and what Senator Obama has tried to do in the course of his public service is to both respect and honor the role of people of all faiths in American life, but at the same time struggle with, you know, the separation between church and state, and also you know, the very real IRS rules around these issues. So we're going to try to find the sweet spot between too much engagement and not enough at this convention.
How do you reassure people who aren't religious? I'm talking about secularists, atheists, that they aren't going to get left out of the party.
Well, I think the way that you do it is you look at who Senator Obama is, what he's talked about, and what he's stood up for, and what this party has stood up for. They, just because we are acknowledging the role of people of faith in American life does not mean that we're not trying to do it responsibly. So instead of you know, having a revival meeting at a convention, you know, we're having discussions. We're having people of all faiths and backgrounds, you know, from Christians to our friends in the Jewish community to our friends in the Muslim community and everybody in between, you know, coming together to talk about the role that faith should play in American life, issues like faith-based initiatives and, you know, tough values issues and the separation between church and state. So the way that I would reassure them is to say that, that you know, we're not just going to force this on people. We're actually going to have a conversation.
Joshua, this election is about electing a president. Surely that there is no goal in your campaign any higher than that of seeing that Barack Obama is elected as the next president of the United States.
Yes, sir.
Now, is not everything else in the political campaign a servant of that end? Stay with me just a second. So religion is in the campaign because it helps the candidate, not because Democrats necessarily are wanting to function as evangelists. So how do you make religion the means for achieving a higher purpose without turning religion into a kind of utilitarian affair?
Well, what I would say is that we're not pushing Senator Obama's religion. You know, he is a committed Christian. He's never been ashamed to talk about that. But what we're talking about is his values. Now, does his Christian faith play into his values? Yes, it does. When, you know, when he reads Matthew and hears, you know, the biblical injunction to take care of the least of these in our nation and in our world, that plays a role in how he sees matters like poverty, like our failing economy.
Mm-hmm.
His value system playing a role into that, and we think that the American public deserves to know what his values are.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the way that we refrain from sort of co-opting religion is by being very honest with folks, that we're not simply you know, saying that he's a Christian, so vote for him, but here's where his values are on a wide range of issues.
Mm-hmm. The press has shied away from reporting details on election strategies, such as what appears in campaign materials. I remember looking at the brochures in South Carolina. I think they were somewhere else, where stamped in big red letters on the campaign materials were the words, "I am a committed Christian." Those were Senator Obama's materials. Now, I guess it's a kind of double-jointed question. Do you wish that the press had covered that more so that point was made, or do you wish that it had been just like it was so that the people in South Carolina saw it but other people didn't?
Well, you know, I'll answer the question, but one clarification I want to make. Those words weren't just stamped on a piece of campaign material. Those are actually words that came out of Senator Obama's mouth, you know,
right,
and have been coming out of his mouth for over 20 years because he's not ashamed to talk about his Christian journey.
And right.
So I think that this message that he's putting forth is an outgrowth of who he is.
Joshua, I understand what you're saying because I don't, and if I even implied that I didn't think that what was on the material was not in his heart, then I would apologize. But my concern was this. You said that you were looking at the primacy of values, and talking about values is one thing. Talking about the committed Christian identity goes, it looks to me like, goes a little bit beyond values and even suggests, perhaps, what you said you didn't want to do, and that is that people should vote for me because I'm a committed Christian. I want to push that because I hear people confused about it, and I want to understand it.
The unfortunate thing about this particular election cycle is that, you know, there's a relatively substantial amount of misinformation about Senator Obama, who he is and what he stands for, in a number of different areas, including, you know, folks quite frankly didn't know a tremendous amount about him because he wasn't on the national scene for a long time.
And Joshua, you should know that on State of Belief, we have tried to clarify the difference between what Senator Obama says and that spurious, scandalous email that went around misidentifying him. So I understand that is the background of this.
Definitely. And you know, just as you might say if someone came on your show and said Senator Obama is, you know, of a different faith than the Christian faith, and you say, well, no, wait a minute, he's a Christian. Mm-hmm. That's what, you know, that's what we have done on this campaign, mm-hmm. is both proactively and also in reaction to misinformation, saying, well, you know, this is who he is. Now, it's fine if it would be fine if he's a member of any other faith background, and there are millions of Americans from diverse faiths that we certainly honor in this campaign, but this is who he is. So it's no different from you or from the Associated Press or anyone else saying proactively, Obama, a Christian, mm-hmm. says this or that.
How do you feel about going into Denver? Do you feel like your work is on track, or that there's a whole lot more to do, or what's your feeling?
Well, I feel pretty good about it. You know, we're looking forward to some great conversations at the Faith Caucus sessions and a good interfaith service on Sunday, and then, you know, a diverse group of invocators and benedictors throughout the week. And, mm-hmm. you know, still a lot of things to put together, but I think it'll be a good week.
Joshua, I have to tell you, I'm glad you're young, because to do what you have set out to do is going to take every ounce of energy you've got, and I bet you're already finding that out.
Well, it is certainly wearing me out, but I'm glad to do it. I just feel so strongly about Senator Obama, who he is, the values that he stands for. And, you know, Reverend Gaddy, he's a good guy. He's a family man. He loves his wife, loves his two daughters, and I just think it'd be phenomenal for him to be in the White House. So I'm enjoying every minute of it.
Joshua DuBois is the Director of Religious Affairs for the Obama campaign. He's a very, very busy young man, and very kind to take some time out to talk with us. Joshua, thank you for being on State of Belief.
Reverend, it's been a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
I'm Welton Gaddy. You're listening to State of Belief on Air America Radio. We got to take a quick break right now. But when we come back, and don't you go away while we're gone, when we come back, a look at what it means to be religious and progressive. Are commentators wrong when they use the term religious left? Find out next. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to State of Belief. I'm Welton Gaddy. After the 2004 election in which George W. Bush beat John Kerry, do you remember that? Many commentators and pundits rushed to their typewriters or microphones to pontificate on how the Democrats lost because they were unable to persuade the so-called value voters to their side of the aisle. Now, a value voter was typically characterized as one who chose a conservative stance on abortion or gay marriage, and naturally, of course, cast his or her ballot for the Republican candidate. Well, now here we are, 4 years and one long election cycle later, and many are now realizing, surprise, being religious doesn't necessarily mean caring only about those wedged social issues. Much has, in fact, been made this campaign cycle about the new evangelicals, those who care less about reproductive issues and more about core progressive ideals like peace and social justice and protection for the environment. But what does it mean to be progressive and religious? I could argue, of course, that you can't be religious without being progressive, but the words have nuances that make the distinctions. And how do members of other faiths manifest these similar values? Well, my next guest set out to answer those very questions. Robert P. Jones is the author of a new book aptly titled Progressive and Religious: How Christian, Jewish, Muslim, and Buddhist Leaders Are Moving Beyond the Culture Wars and Transforming American Public Life. In that book, he's compiled nearly 100 interviews with a variety of faith leaders of what he calls the progressive religious movement. Robert, welcome to State of Belief.
Hi, thanks very much.
So I guess to start out, we better deal with those two words, progressive and religious. Tell me how you understand them.
Well, like you said, I mean, one of the problems we've had is that the term religious got really narrowed to being only about being politically conservative. And one of the things the book is called Progressive and Religious, and I want to be really clear about that, that I want to say one of the biggest findings of the book really is that there's a perfectly natural fit, you know, between being politically progressive on the one hand and authentically or even traditionally very religious. And in fact, you know, most of the people that I interviewed in the book have very traditional beliefs and practices, attending Shabbat services every week, who are involved in various renewal movements that are about religious renewal. But they're also then those religious renewals then lead them into things like standing for worker justice, protection of the environment, working to alleviate poverty, HIV/AIDS in the world, those kinds of issues.
I know it's implicit rather than explicit, but there is a sense as you read your book at times that this is a movement. Mm. Do you think it is a movement?
I do. You know, one of the reasons I wrote the book was to see if such a thing existed. I mean, just to kind of tie it to a personal story, I grew up Southern Baptist in the South. And went to Southern Baptist Seminary and was at the seminary actually when it was taken over by the fundamentalist wing of our denomination.
Now, you need to know that our listeners don't always trust two Baptists in a studio together. So.
That's right. That's right. But I think it's significant, though, that, I mean, one of the things that pushed me to write this book, I mean, this book is really a three-year journey to find the other religious America, is one way that I put mm-hmm. it. This has always been with us. The progressive religious tradition in America goes way, way back to, you know, the abolitionist movement, to the civil rights movement. It's probably its most visible in the peace movement, recent incarnations. But it's always been a very tried and true part of the American experience. And what's happened is it has just really been eclipsed by a kind of media machine among the religious right that has really kind of claimed center stage, but in a very disproportionate way. And one of the very interesting things I found in the book is that once I started digging through the numbers, it turns out that what you might call the religious left is roughly the same size as the religious right that we've heard so much about. But what I found in the book is that this movement actually goes beyond what you might call the religious left and is really a much broader movement of left and center, really moving to address these issues of social justice, the common good, those kinds of issues, not narrow, you know, mm-hmm. partisan-oriented issues, but really going beyond the culture wars, which is in the subtitle of the book, as one of the things that I found. But it really is a movement of leaders who are beginning to know one another across religious traditions. So Jews working on community-based or congregation-based community organizing, which is a movement that is fairly new to the Jewish synagogue scene, but has been going on in Christian churches for some time. And those conversations beginning to cross-pollinate one another, mm-hmm. the environmental movement, a number of movements that actually go across. And these leaders are starting to actually build a movement that I think increasingly we're going to see finding its public voice in this election and beyond.
You indicated that many of the people with whom you spoke avoided the term religious left. Why was that? Is that term too limiting, or what is it?
Well, you know, I think it's a reaction to the damaging way that religion has functioned in society. It's been divisive. It's pit one American over another, all the red versus blue, Christian right versus everyone else. And I think it's a reaction to that. And I think it's a realization that in our time, what we need, the last thing we need, is one more politicized small religious group dividing Americans from one another. What we really need is a new group that comes together, that pulls together across ideological lines, across partisan lines, and really moves us all together forward together. And one quick quote that I'll read to you, because I think it goes exactly to this, is Sister Joan Chittister. And she said, "I don't want to be part of anything anymore in my life that makes those boundaries barriers. I don't want to be defined as right or left. I want to be defined as a Christian with the world in mind." These people who are really leaders are trying to move us all without internecine warfare into a very spiritual world, into a very new world. And I heard that over and over and over again, this idea that moving beyond left and right, mm-hmm. going deeper, and moving us all to a place where we can find some common ground and move forward together.
I want you to tell our listeners what you heard from some of the Muslim leaders with whom you talked, because in reporting on various conversations, you make clear these Muslim leaders talked about their interest in diversity, religious pluralism. I think some people would find that surprising.
Sure.
Tell us what you heard.
Yeah, one of the verses that got cited most from the Quran, actually, among my Muslim leaders is, and I'm going to paraphrase here because I'm not no expert on the Quran, but that God or Allah had created people to be different so that they could come to know one another. And that built into the very fabric of the sacred text within Islam is this idea of difference and this idea of pluralism, and that can be, you know, very easily tapped and fits very well into a democratic pluralistic society. And finding those authentic Islamic roots of democratic pluralism was a real project that many of the Muslim leaders that I talked about. I should just say I hate that it needs to be said, but that every Muslim leader I talked to was very clear in denouncing violence against innocent people and denouncing mm-hmm. terrorism. And you know, two of the other key themes that came out in the chapter on Islam, and I take some pains to try to tease out what some of the themes were in each chapter. And one of the themes that came out in the chapter on Islam is this emphasis on the twin virtues of beauty and truth, and that those two things hold together, and that and one of the things that the Muslim leaders were pushing back hard against is what they just called the ugliness after ugliness after ugliness that had been perpetrated in the name of Islam, and doubt and decried that, denounced that very, very clearly, and I think showed a very new face of Islam compared to what we see sometimes portrayed in the media.
I was going to ask you as a final question if you know who's going to win the election, but I think what I want to ask you instead is the outcome of this election going to be based on whether or not the real Christians vote, or is it going to be based on a political decision?
Yeah. The real Christians. Would that I knew what that was.
Well, listen, I could point you to many people who can tell you.
Yeah, right. So, you know, I hope the outcome of this election is going to be based on whether all Americans vote and whether they vote all of their values, all of their religious values, all of their moral values, you know, all of their deeply held values of any kind. I think that's my hope for this election. And I think that that's one of the healthy things that this progressive religious movement is going to do, is make for a much healthier public sphere so that the religious views of all Americans and not just a few are represented in the public.
Robert P. Jones is the president of Public Religion Research, a consulting firm advising national advocacy groups. His new book, you need to take a look at it. His new book, you need to buy it, is called Progressive and Religious, How Christian, Jewish, Muslim, and Buddhist Leaders Are Moving Beyond the Culture Wars and Transforming American Public Life. Robert, thanks for being with us on State of Belief.
Thanks so much.
I'm Welton Getty, and this is State of Belief. And yes, friends, it's almost time for us to enter our very favorite intersection, the one where politics meets religion, the one where you can get hit. Our intersection awards are next. Stay tuned. Welcome back to State of Belief. I'm Welton Getty. And I'm joined now by William Blake, press secretary of the Interfaith Alliance. We don't have any theme music for William, do we? We got to do something about that. William, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
I guess today that we're going to be talking about the candidate forum that took place last weekend when Senators John McCain and Barack Obama visited Rick Warren's Saddleback Church. There were some good things said at that forum, and there were some not so good things said at that forum, and there may have even been some things that shouldn't have been said at that forum. So why don't you get us started?
Well, Welton, you're right. It was a smorgasbord of different lights. But why don't we get started on a high note with a green light going to Pastor Warren's opening statement. Let's take a listen.
We're here at Saddleback Church here in Lake Forest, California. And tonight we're going to use the interview format with these two candidates. Now, we believe in the separation of church and state, but we do not believe in the separation of faith and politics, because faith is just a worldview, and everybody has some kind of worldview, and it's important to know what they are.
Well, Pastor Warren later in the broadcast acknowledged that everyone has values that shape a worldview, even atheists and secularists. Now, Welton, how often do you hear evangelicals acknowledge the legitimacy of atheist values?
Not very often. I'm glad that the pastor mentioned that. I think that his opening statement was a welcome, refreshing declaration of importance to remind people of the importance of separation of church and state, but that doesn't impose on them a separation personally of religion and politics in their lives. But you know what? It went downhill.
Yeah, it did. And I think we should move on to more dangerous territory. And let's now hand out a yellow light to Pastor Warren for this fairly pointed question about abortion. Here's the clip.
40 million abortions since Roe v. Wade. Some people who believe that life begins at conception would say that's a Holocaust for many people. What point is a baby entitled to human rights?
Now, I understand people on both sides of the abortion issue often have very strong feelings, but Pastor Warren promised a civilized discussion of the issues. And to a large extent, I think he accomplished that, but does invoking the horror of the Holocaust ever spur a civilized discussion?
Now, William, I think that the pastor asked the wrong question. At that point, he diverted from asking questions about political positions and ask a theological question. And I don't expect Barack Obama or John McCain necessarily to be able to answer a theological question. We do need to know where they stand on abortion and abortion rights. And it became divisive, and we missed the central point, because when you ask a wrong question, you're probably not going to get the right answer.
Well, finally, let's put on the brakes for a red light. And we knew this was coming, the ultimate pastor-in-chief question. Take a listen.
You've made no doubt about your faith in Jesus Christ. What does that mean to you? What does it mean to you to trust in Christ? And what does that mean on a daily basis? I mean, what does that really look like?
Well, and Barack Obama answered the question in theological terms. But isn't the proper answer to that question, that's none of your business?
That's the answer that I think would be appropriate from both candidates. If they answered the question, as both of them did, I think it would have been very helpful if the questioner didn't raise the issue, for them to raise the issue of, now that having been said, so what? Because we're not running for an office in which we've got to know how to express our belief in Jesus. We're running for an office in which we've got to know how to run a nation that has multiple needs and diversity of religions and people depending on us to get it right. So that's not a question that helps.
Well, you know, if the personal faith of the candidates were an actual effective barometer for the candidate's wisdom and vision, George W. Bush might be one of our best presidents, but look at how he turned out, right, Welton?
There's no question about that. and you're not supposed to get the really good lines.
Sorry about that, Weldon.
Before we go today, I want to speak directly to members of the Democratic Party, those in Denver for the convention to be sure, but as well to Democrats across the nation who can't make it to Denver. Not only do I want listeners to State of Belief to hear these challenges, I want you to join me in watching what Democrats do in Denver so that over the next few days, we can talk about it together on the website of State of Belief, stateofbelief.com. First, Democrats, if you must launch a new faith-based initiative, for goodness sake, no, actually, for the sake of the Constitution, please tell us how you will make it constitutional. It is not enough to say that you will fund only a certain ministry, but not fund proselytizing and religious programming. Look, we have heard that from the Bush administration for nearly 8 years, and we know the deception that can accompany that description. I will listen carefully to Barack Obama to learn whether or not he's willing to take the legal steps necessary to establish a faith-based program that respects the Constitution's provisions for religious freedom. Listen and watch with me, friends. Tell me what you see and hear. Second, I will look closely and listen carefully to Democrats to see how they talk about religion and to discover whether or not they convey respect for religious pluralism and for people who embrace no religion. Any political party that merits support among the American people should offer assurance that all of the American people are in the scope of its vision and within listening distance of its decision makers. Without a doubt, Barack Obama will once again speak of his personal faith. Will he do so making obvious his appreciation and respect for those whose faith is different from his and those who have no religious faith? State of Belief listeners, I need for you to look and listen also, and then tell us what you saw and what you heard and what you think about. Let's compare opinions on stateofbelief.com. And finally, I'll be paying careful attention to see if political leaders who talk about their faith will tell us in no uncertain terms just how their faith will impact the decisions they make in the offices in which they serve. My most intense attention, of course, will be focused on Barack Obama. I want to know if Barack Obama will make the same promise to the American people made by his predecessor, John F. Kennedy. Will Obama, like Kennedy, assure voters that he will resign the office before he will allow his religious convictions to cause him to compromise the Constitution? So much is at stake here. We dare not be looking on, comparing notes, and finding ways to assure that our voices are heard. So go to stateofbelief.com to read my thoughts on what's said and what isn't said at the conventions, and then I want to hear from you too at stateofbelief.com. I'll see you there. State of Belief is produced by the Interfaith Alliance Foundation, a not-for-profit organization, which means this show is supported by members of the Interfaith Alliance. Go to interfaithalliance.org to learn more. And while you're there, why don't you think about becoming more than a listener? Become a member of the Interfaith Alliance. Your membership can help keep State of Belief on the air. Then next week, we got interviews from the floor of the Democratic Convention. Make sure to tune in. Until then, I'm Reverend Welton Gaddy, and that's State of Belief.
Billy Ray was a preacher's son, and when his daddy would visit, he'd come along.
State of Belief, religion and radio done differently.